Computer not working right? Benjamin Rockwell can make sense of it for you, guiding you on your computer quest. Here is Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
This week's Computer Talk Radio is going to include a number of different looks back at this past year, including the scam series. What was the big, huge thing about scams this year? I'll tell you on that. Marty is also going to look back at 2024, and I'm also going to cover our various nerds of the year, both the runners-up and the actual nerd of the year, people who passed away. This is our annual memoriam of all of the different people who impacted technology and space and everything else that you might imagine. We do have some listener questions as well. Assad asks, is Moore's law broken? Is CPU megahertz isn't climbing? And that, I'm going to get a little wonky with that, but I'll explain what is going on there. Cindy wanted some work from home productivity tips. Steve Keski, well, he wants to know if I think robots will become humanized. We banter about that, of course. Keith M. Zedor, he's going to tell us about his first time machine restoration. And coming up next, after we cover the news from 2024, information that you should not give over to AI. If you miss any of the different elements of this week's Computer Talk Radio, or you want to listen to previous versions of it, go ahead and go to the website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. Scroll down to where it says listen here. You can also reach out to us. You can contact us, again, at ComputerTalkRadio.com, or you can phone me at 888-NERD. 888, that's 888-6373-888. Usually around this time of year, news slows down, so I thought I would take a look back at 2024 and some of the big, huge items that we talked about. Of course, there was the bill that could end TikTok. Well, at least ban it here in the United States. And just in the last week, we've actually found that there's sort of a reprieve. It's going to be another year or so for them to sort all of that out. Another thing that happened this year was another just bad thing in regards to end-user license agreements. Disney was not the only one that buried something deep in their end-user license agreements, but they were the most egregious, I think, when we had an issue of someone pass away and they said, well, because you had a trial version of Disney Plus that you signed away your rights in perpetuity to any kind of lawsuits against them. It would have to go to arbitration. And then, of course, cryptocurrency. Yeah, cryptocurrency is both succeeding in some areas but failing miserably in other areas. Yes, Bitcoin, it did hit the $100,000 mark earlier this year, earlier this month, really. But that doesn't mean that cryptocurrency is good, of course. There were a number of different famous announcements of cryptocurrencies that immediately turned around and failed. Elon Musk, this past year, put a ton of distance on his net worth to the tune of, as I'm reading this right now off of the website, $245 billion. He nearly doubled his net worth, and he is edging up towards that $500 billion mark as we speak. That's a significant number. NVIDIA actually beat out Apple for a good while earlier this year, but they have fallen to the number two spot. They are still bigger than Microsoft and Alphabet and Amazon. Yeah, that's it. That's the top five there. Apple at the top, of course. And we're going to see a lot of tech really continuing along that direction, beating out a lot of the other corporations and companies around the world. Of course, we did get some good news from the government. The Federal Trade Commission did announce the click-to-cancel rule, and they finalized out the wording. And it is going to be just a couple of more months before all of that has to be rolled out by the various companies, making it easier for us to, yes, save a little bit of our own money. And I'm looking forward to that one. We had, of course, another very interesting incident, unfortunate for some Hezbollah members. They did receive a page, and then, yeah, that went rather ugly for a lot of them. And we had also a lot of things in regards to space. We did have what they called the scariest spacewalk in 50 years, where Polaris Dawn lifted off, and this was the first commercial spacewalk. This was the first fully commercial space exploration, and that is very exciting. It gives us an idea of a very interesting future ahead of us in space. Hertz, they ran into some issues along the lines of all of the Teslas that they had purchased. And actually, it's all of the EVs that they got. I mean, this was not just Tesla. They did a Silverado EV. They did Polestars, the Chevy Bolt. And you've got the idea. But they have been going through and they have been working to get rid of their fleet. They are even pitching to people who are renting a Tesla. Hey, you know, would you like to buy this instead of returning it to us? Did you like the car? And that's part of salesmanship, I guess. But it's something that is very interesting to see how that's unfolding and how that might shape up our coming EV future, or maybe lack of a future there. Kaspersky Software, they were banned from the United States, and Biden gave them 100 days to find a way out of it, and they couldn't. They sold it off to another company, sold off their customer list, and kind of sold us out as the software auto uninstalled, but then installed their replacement without asking anybody. There's been a lot of talk in regards to return to the office or else, and this came from a number of different companies. Dell was probably one of the biggest ones, hitting the headlines, where nearly half of their employees said, we'll choose option B, the or else option. And that's not boding very well for big corporations who want everybody to come back in. I think the ship has sailed on that one. I think we're going to find a lot of people are going to continue to clamor for those work-from-home positions. The Boeing Starliner, that was a big news article for this past year, where, yes, they struggled and struggled and struggled to have liftoff. And then they got up to the ISS, and there was such a lack of confidence in the Boeing Starliner that it returned without the two astronauts. Those two astronauts, yeah, unfortunately, both of them are still up on the ISS. That one-week trip that was supposed to happen in June is still going and has been extended. It looks like probably March before they actually return. Yeah, that's kind of concerning, but it says more about Boeing, I think, than our overall space program. TP-Link, they are the number one best-selling wireless router in the United States. And along with the ban against TikTok and Kaspersky, yes, TP-Link is being threatened with a ban to cut them off. And we'll see how that unfolds in the coming year. There was a big, huge event about AI, Apple Intelligence, not artificial. Well, it's still artificial intelligence. It's just with a different branding. And Apple pushed it, and a lot of people looked back just in the last few weeks, and I myself included. What was the big, huge thing about this? Why are we being pushed in that direction? Of course, Apple also took way too long to tell people, don't put your wet iPhone in rice. It's not going to solve the problem and dry it out. Windows 10, it still holds a stronghold with nearly 62% of the installed user base. This is what, 3 years after Windows 11? And Windows 11 is still sitting there at about 35% of the install base. And last up, LG. No more Blu-ray players from them. And that may also give us an indication as to what's going to happen with physical media. Coming up next, information that you should never give over to artificial intelligence. That'll be next here on Computer Talk Radio.
Let's talk about on and off.
You mean like light switches?
Yeah, the original user interface device.
And you were there, right?
Hey, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you are. So on and off.
Yeah, only with no humans doing it, like...
But you and I both have our computers on CyberPower UPS systems.
Yeah, so we have power, but there's another on and off.
Oh, right. Online and offline.
You got it. Meaning another UPS at the cable modem and VoIP phone and Wi-Fi router.
And even a low-cost standby UPS can handle those. Better, of course, if it has AVR.
Right, so it doesn't have to hit the battery just because the line voltage drops.
Maybe it's a good time to mention the promo that saves $10 to $15. Details are at the CyberPower website.
And maybe you could put it on your website?
Oh, that's already done at ComputerTalkRadio.com.
You know, on and off. You take really good care of your listeners.
The usage of AI is building and building amongst everyone. We're experimenting around with ChatGPT and Google's Gemini and all of the rest of these different products. I'm going to tell you that there are some things you don't want to share with AI chatbots. But first, the phone number, 888-NERD-888. That's 888-637-3888. You can ask me your computer questions, your technology concerns. I'm more than happy to cover any of that with you. So let's dive into some of the things I don't want you to be giving to these AI chatbots. And there's a number of different things. Let's start off with probably one of the biggest things out there. And that is, you don't want to have it create your passwords. You don't want to share your passwords with it. You don't want to give any private information to them, but above all, passwords. Part of this comes from the fact that a couple of years ago, there was a data breach that involved ChatGPT, and a lot of information was released out there. And this is something that we need to be aware that this is going to be an increasing target of the hackers. Along with that, that means that any information you put out to any of these chatbots can eventually be siphoned off. Probably not by the creators of these chatbots, but by hackers. So for that reason, no passwords, but also let's dive into confidential workplace information. There is a lot of information that we are tempted to give to these chatbots. There's a lot of information that we think, oh, hey, we'll let AI fold, process, mutilate, spindle, all of that data and give us the information that we want. Now, when we do this, we're leaving that information out there. That information then can be, yes, hacked. to the extent that a lot of these tech giants that are out there, and you can name any of them, Google, who puts out Google Gemini, they said, no, employees should not utilize any of the AI chatbots out there. Samsung said the same thing. Apple Intelligence, they said the same thing. And this is a key indicator for all of us. This is something we all need to be very aware of. If they are saying don't put our data out there, why would you put your company's data on the internet? All of the different information that we might be tempted to put out there. We're talking about customer information, profit, sales, whatever it is. The different widgets that you build, all of that. That leaves it open for a lot of different things. And we can go down a number of different roads. One of the things, of course, that has arisen out of this is a lot of different companies are investing in putting up a system internal to the company. One of these large language models, one of these various AI chatbots for usage inside of your own company. Ask your technology department to ask the folks that are in the know about what might be happening within your systems to see if perhaps, yes, you have one of these available internally. Otherwise, don't be putting that information out on the internet. Don't put it where it can be eventually downloaded by the bad guys, because they will make usage of it, and it's just a matter of time before we see more of these data breaches. Next up, do not put your personally identifying information out there, PII. And this is something we've heard about this over the years. We've grown more accustomed to hearing this kind of term. It basically means don't put your location out there. Don't put your social security number, your date of birth, any of your health information, anything that can be used to locate you or anything that can be used to identify you. Why? Again, all of this oversharing that we're doing is going to be retained by these chatbots for a good period of time. So you do not want to put anything out there that is truly personal. And when we talk about this, do not put anything out there that you would give to a hacker, because again, the hackers will come along. All of these different AI chatbots, they've got privacy risks to them. And it's something that we, you know, there's that old saying, you know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. What happens on the internet stays on the internet forever. So you want to avoid putting anything out there that is going to be potentially taken away. And that includes your financial details. And yes, I'm going to tell you that there are upsides to a number of these different things. You can increase your information and knowledge by asking vague questions, by asking informational questions that will give you knowledge. That's great. But if you start putting specifics out there, like your financial information, you put out anything that might be in regards to your spending habits or anything that could be used to profile you for scams, like phishing emails, mimicking your bank. Yeah. Hey, I've got $10,000 at Bank of America, and I want to know how I should invest this. Okay, so right there, you're opening yourself up to a scam that talks about alternative investments, and it may even purport to be coming from Bank of America. And this is, again, depending on what the hackers are able to obtain. If they obtain your questions, if they obtain some of those responses, well, that's going to be really tough. So you want to limit anything that you're giving to, again, ChatGPT or Google Gemini. You want to limit it to broad questions, generalized information. Now, If you want to get into specifics, you need to go to a specialist for that. For instance, again, the financial information that I just mentioned, that whole idea of trusting a computer to give you the best financial advice, not a good thing. You probably want to find a financial advisor. At that point, they're going to have far more specific information. They're also going to ask you a lot of different questions pertaining to your personal situation, which is a lot different than what we're talking about when we're talking to AI. Last up, I want you to think back. Let's go back into the 70s and 80s and 90s. There was a chat program called Eliza, and a lot of people utilized Eliza as just kind of a thought process, kind of a psychiatrist, if you will, psychologist rather, and just kind of used that to work through some of the things they were doing and dealing with. And it was a very poor version of the limited language model that we see today, but It was far more limited back then. But these days, I do know we've seen a lot of record of people talking about this. They get, hey, you know, I consulted my AI to help me overcome this particular problem or that or whatever. Look, you need to be very, very aware that AI chatbots lack any of the knowledge of the real world, and they can only offer what are basically very simple responses to any inquiries you might have. This is whether we're talking mental health or we're talking physical health. We're talking about the medicines or treatments that might be out there, and they may not be anywhere near as accurate as what you are hoping for. This is an area which could lead to very dangerous implications for you. Again, we can utilize AI. It's just a matter of be very careful about the specifics you give it and also the information that it might respond back to you. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
The phone number, 888-NERD, 888, that's 888-6373, 888. Keith Emcedor and I are working on this occasional series in regards to backing up Macs. And this is an important thing for all computer users. Mm-hmm. Everybody who's got a computer, and actually even moving beyond that, all of your devices, you need to be thinking about your own internal in-house backup. Yes, I know there's iCloud, and Keith, I'm sure we'll be talking about that at a future point. But I believe wholeheartedly in you having your own solid
local backup.
But anyways, going back into this series,
previous weeks,
yes,
I'm going to regale you with a tale of my very first time machine restoration.
Okay.
It is, I'm going to say, 2009, 2010. The devices have only been out for a year or two. It might not even have been that late in time. It could have been as early as sometime in 2008, the year they were introduced.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind, Benjamin, I am in the habit and practice of setting up Apple's new Time Machine software with their companion Time Capsule product.
Yeah.
But it is an exercise in faith. I'm talking about walking in faith, having trust in Apple and this solution that they purport is better than the things we've been doing before to quote unquote back up, because like Schrodinger's cat, you don't know whether you have a backup. You do and you don't until you actually attempt a restoration.
Yeah. And that's why you're supposed to test restorations on a regular basis. But that's for another day. Go on.
A client that I had.
Yeah.
That I'd set up a 27-inch iMac for and the subsequent backup. And they had a lot of custom content. Their desktop, their dock. They had a huge photos library, a massive iTunes library back when we were all using iTunes on our Macs.
iTunes.
And to say nothing.
Now there's a name I've not heard in a long time.
Thank you, Obi-Wan. But I digress. It was a very, very custom configured machine with a lot of content. And not 3 months after I set it up for them. It was a brand new iMac, I might add.
Yeah.
The hard drive fails. And this falls into the category of something my data recovery laboratory director tells me. All hard drives fail. It's not a matter of if. It's a matter
it's
of
a
when.
Matter of when, yes.
You can get hard drives that last you 10 years. You can get hard drives that fail 10 minutes out of the box. And most are somewhere in between.
Yes.
So the client calls me up. In a not necessarily a panicked state, because the computer was still under warranty, even without AppleCare, it was only 3 months old.
Mm-hmm.
And they had taken it back to Apple, and Apple had replaced the hard drive and reinstalled a fresh copy of the operating system, sent them on their way with what was basically and ostensibly a brand new Mac all over again.
Yeah.
So they brought it in with all of their data on it, and they brought it home empty, save for the operating system.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, don't worry about that, because we backed up your computer using Time Machine and backed it all up to your time capsule. And at this point, I'm operating solely on faith because I believed it was backed up. I took all the proper precautions and the proper steps and the proper measures to ensure that it was backed up.
Yeah.
But again, like that big bad retrospect story we had where we thought we had a backup and then somebody's hard drive failed and we went to restore it and it wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
I was hoping against hope that that was not going to be the case with Apple and their solution for backups.
Mm-hmm.
So I go over there. I connect their time capsule to their newly restored with a brand new hard drive, iMac. I run the Time Machine migration utility, which has a restoration feature in it for you could either normally, if you're going to migrate from an old Mac to a new Mac, you know, plug a cable between the two and
have it
shift data over, or you can plug in a Time Machine backup from a hard drive or from a time capsule, run the utility, and wouldn't you know, Benjamin? About 90 minutes later, every preference, every setting, every application, every document, every photo, every music library was restored as if it never, ever happened.
And that's the way it should be. That's the way all backups and restores should happen. I'll tell you, I have seen other instances where there is a very famous online service that my brother-in-law used to use, and he paid them for 4 or 5 years, and he went to restore this from its...
Does the name of the company sound something similar to What Could Kill Superman?
Very similar. I'll say it was what Han Solo is frozen in.
Ah, okay. Yes, that's a much better way of putting it.
Yes. And I will tell you, we talked about this years ago. He went and they promised they'd restore it. And when it came to restoration time, nope, sorry.
Fail.
Oh, they gave him really poor customer support. And actually, I got on the phone with them at that time, way back when, as well as one of my associates who also is in radio. And we're both talking to them and we're going, what's the deal here? And they said, so sorry. All right. He wants a refund. Nope, not going to do it. So you're not going to give him his data or his money. Oh, that was an ugly day. But yeah. So, yeah, always test your backups. Always make sure you know that the backups are going to work. This is part of a series that Keith and I have been doing on the Mac side of backups. And when he and I get done with this, we're going to put this all together in one big, huge podcast file up.
And we will also talk about online backups as well.
Oh, yes. Yes, definitely. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And I'm Keith M. Seedorf.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Most of us use digital cameras nowadays, but what do we do with those old pictures and slides in the back of the closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. If you have boxes of old slides, then you know they fade more and more each year. Let Legacy Digital scan them for you and stop the aging process dead in its tracks. You'll get beautiful 10-megapixel digital files, color-corrected and ready for printing. All this is done faster and cheaper than buying a film scanner and doing it yourself. Your files are then burned onto gold archival DVD discs where they will last for generations. Call right now, mention my name, Benjamin Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY. And tell them Benjamin sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
Website computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. That's how you can reach out to us. Scroll down to where it says contact us today. We will answer your computer questions, your technology concerns, and yes, we'll get back with you as soon as we can. Marty Winston joins me now, and Marty, 2024 for tech. It seemed like it was all over the place. There was good stuff, there was bad stuff. What comes to mind from this past year?
Oh boy, the news of 2024 with a tech bent.
Yeah.
A lot of things that we can't control top the news.
Yeah.
Cyber warfare attacks all over the world.
Yes.
A lot of major corporations in the U.S. getting hit. Mm-hmm. Government entities getting hit. Lots of ransoms.
Yeah.
On the less gnarly side of that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of enhanced AI, enhanced more than we'd seen before, in advanced election interference.
I would say politicking, because they came from both sides, but yeah.
Large language model AI, which you know I distrust remarkably.
Sure.
It became a Pied Piper for investment, despite its major shortcomings.
Well, they... somehow they think they can throw money at this issue. You can't throw money at a problem, but you can't throw money at a perceived solution and make things happen faster. It just doesn't work like that.
Yeah, the flaws and dangers just don't go away.
Yeah.
How about increasing recalls for some of the most advanced and most mature electronic vehicles?
Yes. Yes, the Cybertruck had, what, five of them before the first 5 months? Something like that, yeah. I can't remember the number, but yeah.
That's not the record they thought they'd be breaking.
What? Sure, yeah.
Power grid unreliability and vulnerability.
Yeah, yeah.
Streaming cable service fee inflation.
Yes, yes. Both the streaming services and the cable services and internet services from the cable company. And yeah, the list goes on.
All those content sources, not to mention the commercials you thought they'd let you dodge now that you're paying for them.
I know, I know. You've got Amazon Prime. It's commercial-free, commercial-free, commercial. Oh, hey, we're going to add in commercials unless you pay more for Amazon Prime. Wait, what? What? Yeah, I know.
Smartphones got bigger and heavier, got more bars and more runtime hours.
Those are now tablets. Carry around it.
Almost.
Yeah. But why do I need
it? Platforms for strongly competitive AI hype.
Tons of AI hype, and it didn't deliver on either side. We're going to have AI, but it's going to be later on. Yeah, I know. Oh, don't get me started on that one.
And Microsoft, which, you know, were they late to the game or just not strong in the beginning? It's hard to tell, but they focused unprecedented amounts of their marketing assets on touting their AI, which was more A than I.
Yes, definitely more artificial.
Online meetings got way more entrenched, and even with mounting mounds of research showing that they hurt both companies' employees, nothing effective has taken any significant step toward taming them.
Yeah, yeah.
Good news, USB 4 and SD 4 and IP 7 and other performance improved standards became available at reasonable prices and reasonable volumes to show their validity and relevance. But then again, there's been more than a half a century of computer stuff getting both faster and more reliable over time, and generally not a lot of time.
Yeah, yeah. This is, we're going to see improvements like that along the way, definitely. But that's just, I think of that as just run of the mill. I don't think of that as so much newsworthy.
Yeah, it makes you yawn, doesn't it?
Yeah, to some extent.
Handheld gaming consoles are a thing again because, of course, kids needed a new way to waste time without learning anything. And their parents may still take a while to recognize what's going on, given the increasing number of hours they have to devote to online meetings.
Yeah. All of this obsession over tech. There was a big, huge increase in people just being obsessed with tech far more than they have been in recent years, I think. And too much of it is just getting them distracted. I've found this year I've talked to more people saying, look, you need to dial it back. These are ways to dial back. These are ways to avoid your tech addiction. People, which is rough because that's I'm a tech. I'm a nerd. I love this tech. And to tell them, dial it back.
I get that, but you know, we're dealing with factors beyond tech. We're dealing with a lot of people who have forgotten how to relate to people, and there's a lot of loneliness and a lot of alienation that still needs to be addressed.
Yeah.
Anyway, when it comes to tech, as one of the favorite 50s era cartoon characters once observed, we have met the enemy, and he is us.
There is that. There is definitely that. And I think, next week we're going to be talking about CES, give a preview of that. And I wonder if all of this, the size of CES has been driven by us, the enemy, to ourselves.
Well, somebody's got to buy all those overpriced sandwiches.
There was that. Man. Oh, wow. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That is Marty Winston. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and just a normal person. Recently, though, it was clear to me that it was time to upgrade. But I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After searching around for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when a 32-ounce soda would do. These guys know WordPress, Joomla, and regular standard websites. These guys at SiteGround are awesome. SiteGround.com. Site, S-I-T-E, ground.com. The bad guys are out to get us. They're out to get you, me, everybody they can. There's no secret there. The reality is that they are continuing to use more and more tools that are at their disposal. They're finding new and ingenious ways to leverage their skills to attack us. And, of course, with the advent of AI, we got a number of different things that enabled us to create new wording from what we had before. It allows us to invent pictures and video that had never existed before. It's all in the minds of AI and how we access it and ask it to do these things for us. So with a tool like that, it's no surprise that this past year has led to all kinds of AI-powered scams. They've caught on. They've found the tool that we were all using for good, and they've turned it to something other than that. So in this past year, we have seen a variety of deepfake videos. They included people like Elon Musk and Taylor Swift and Martin Lewis, but they have continued down the road imitating the voices of people that we know and love, whether it is grandchildren or grandparents, whether it is the bank. Our own bank is reaching out to us, but no, it isn't our bank. It isn't anything but AI just being used to manipulate us, to trick us into trusting whoever is on the other end. But that also includes a variety of different scams where we have started to see the same scam trying to be pulled, but with dramatically different wording so that we aren't able to just say, oh, it's this particular text and it's coming from PayPal as an example. And it is all just shifting and changing. A variety of job emails coming in. Oh, hey, you can earn this much. It used to be just a standard boilerplate that they were just shipping out. But now they've started to change up the descriptions. They've started to change up the dollar amounts, especially when they find that, yes, through AI, they find out, yeah, I am not going to work for a paltry $20 an hour. And so forth and so on. Look, you've got to be careful. We all need to have our guard up, and we need to be thinking about the big picture here. We need to be thinking about, is Elon Musk really going to go on out and tell us to invest in some Bitcoin, some cryptocurrency? Is Taylor Swift going to really give us free concert tickets? Is she going to do whatever it is that she's purporting to do? Reach out of the blue for us? Yeah, this is something where it takes us digging down deeper to think about the reality, the potential here, and ignoring all of these different scams. It's only going to get harder from here, and it's not a pretty picture, I'm afraid. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about the Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows the Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.
Your mouse is dead, and the computer is on life support. Benjamin Rockwell can help with that. And now, it's time for Computer Talk Radio with Benjamin Rockwell.
We are halfway through this week's Computer Talk Radio. The website, computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. You can reach out to us. You can check out the podcast there. We post the notes up there as well. Of course, if you ask us questions, we will get back with you, and we will answer whatever it is you've got, any technology concerns or computer problems. The web, the phone number, 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. And we will answer your questions there as well. We are radio's broadest look at computers, technology, and how they impact our lives. And sometimes we look to the future. Sometimes we look to the past. And we go in a wonderful number of different directions. One of the people who helps me keep on track with this broadest look is Steve Keske, who joins me now. And Steve, what do you have for us this week?
Do you think that robots will ever be humanized?
Humanized. So there's a number of different directions we can go in with this. A matter of the idea of them becoming far more android-like, not referring to the phone, but referring more to something like Data on Star Trek. I will say for that answer, yes. Humanized as far as being truly human and being given human rights, I think that is going to be a very, very, very long fight that the robots will lose for a very, very long time. A matter of, you misbehave, I'm going to have you disassembled, which is, but it's also kind of scary when you think about it from the aspect of, you know, that kind of goes back to millennia ago with slavery, and if you misbehaved, well, yeah. So there's going to be a very huge struggle along that front. Those were the two things that came to mind. So let's tackle the first one. The first one is, for me, is actually going to be easy. We're already moving in that direction.
That's true.
The level of advancement that we have over the course of the years, even back when it was a fictional item of the robots, I'm thinking Robbie the Robot lost in space, but all of these different progressions as we've gone down the line, they have been very much that bipedal, bi-armed, head on them kind of concept, which is going to allow us to have more of a comfortability with them. We're going to be more readily acceptant of them. And we do have, like, the various robots in the vehicle manufacturing plants and places like that. But those are functional items.
Those are functional items. But you see, you're all getting down to that three laws of robotics.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. Now, if we create a robot that looks like us, talks like us, and starts to think like us,
yeah,
are those three laws still going to be valid?
So let me cover those three laws for anybody who hasn't really had the review of them.
Yeah.
A robot may not harm a human being or through inaction allow a human being to come to harm. It must obey the orders given to it by human beings, except where those orders would conflict with the first law, and it must protect its own existence as long as such protection does not conflict with the first or second
law.
So when I start looking at those three laws, I think that they should stay in place. And I think we're going to have a very interesting struggle because this is a self-imposed idea that was originated through Asimov's robot series.
That's true.
And while it makes sense, and we've always talked about it being that way, there has been constant approach to the idea of robotic items out there to do our battles for us.
Well, that's
and that in itself would be a violation of the first law.
Only if the battle is with not would. Be with other humans.
Yes.
Yeah. But if you're doing battles with some insects, okay, then that law doesn't apply.
But it does say a robot may not harm a human being. So
that's it.
So the insects themselves, not an issue. Other robots, not an issue. But then what happens with collateral damage? What happens with all of these other different things along the way? So
if you get down to the point of where a robot can think and, shall we say, think of itself as an entity unto itself, okay, then those three laws come into big question in the robot.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Not necessarily you and I as human beings, but as the robot looks at it and says, yeah, human beings don't apply those three laws.
Yeah.
Why should we?
We may wind up with a lot of that when we start getting into, there's a term, roboethics.
Yeah.
And when we start getting closer to that point, we may eventually find that we're going to have to cross that bridge and program for that.
That's true.
And, you know, and that may become an increasingly difficult thing as they advance along further and further in their abilities.
Yes.
But some of that ability is going to be limited by our technology that we allow to be put into robots. Some of that's going to be limited by our ability to create that technology.
And when does the robot decide, well, I'm just going to rewire my programming?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
that possibility exists.
We do that ourselves, though. We as human beings.
Yeah.
And that kind of brings that into that second part of that we were talking about, a matter of will they be given rights? Will they? Yep. Will we go down a road of saying, "Hey, a robot is an individual entity just as much as Steve or Benjamin or
Keith anybody else,
or Marty or any of our beloved ones out there." So yeah, there's a lot to that.
Yep. And the fact that, do we think that that could possibly happen? Well, yeah. Is it going to happen sooner than later? Probably not. Even at the present rate of computing power going up by Moore's Law, I don't think it's going to happen before we start colonizing places like Mars in about a millennium or so.
Yeah, it's going to take a long time. And there's all the way along, we're going to need to pay attention to the robo-ethics, the various different items, all of our ethics of AI and machine ethics. These are all tied in together. They're very similar to each other.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to have to explore this as we move along. Hopefully, not dive in so fast like Michael Crichton's Jurassic Park, where my favorite scene is in that movie, and it's in the dining room, and they're saying basically, you thought about the fact that you could, but you didn't think about the fact that you should. And we're going to struggle with that. We've got about 30 seconds left. Any final thoughts from you?
Oh, my final thought is, really, I look at it from the standpoint that robots, until they can program and build themselves,
yeah,
we have more control.
Yes, except we're probably going to use robots in some form.
Oh, yeah.
In that manufacturing form, like we do with our cars, our trucks, our vehicles.
But those are all functional.
If we're wise, yes. But as for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Steve Kesky. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. You have a couple of those new carbon open frame racks from CyberPower, right?
Yeah, I love them. I configured a 25U to 40 inches deep, about twice as deep as a regular rack, and put more than a dozen peripherals in it.
You know, I saw your article about it. I can't believe it's not clutter.
And my 45U carbon rack, that's also 40 inches deep, will hold a ton of networking and control systems, the network video recorder.
Holy screwdriver, rack man!
You're getting one of their gorgeous enclosed racks soon.
Oh yeah, the 24U. Bigger than their wall-mount carbon racks, but smaller than their tall boy.
Did you see what's happening with carbon on the CyberPower website?
Oh yeah, the promo, 10% off all their racks and rack accessories through the end of September. I put a link up at computertalkradio.com. computertalkradio.com. Cindy reached out to me with a question. You work from home. What tips do you have to keep on track? And I will tell you, if you have questions, reach out to me. ComputerTalkRadio.com. ComputerTalkRadio.com. It's nice, basic, simple, straight to the point. You work from home. What tips do you have to keep on track? And this is a topic that I've covered since a lot of us started working from home back when COVID started. And yes, there are people who are going back to the office and they are finding some success there and others are not. So it does rely on those who still have that ability to work from home to make sure that we do keep on track, that we do stay productive, we stay motivated, we just keep working. Just like we would if we were in the office. So motivation can be a challenge. And a lot of these things I'm going to cover, I've covered these before, but it's been a while. So let's go through these. First up, make sure you've got a routine going. And just because you're not going into the office doesn't mean you shouldn't have a routine. You need to set a schedule and you need to stick to it. Of course, some of these portions of the schedule include, yes, sticking to your work hours. Yes, you might have some flexibility. Some bosses say, hey, as long as you get your work done during the day, you're doing fine. But you still need to account for a number of things that are part of your normal life. So you do need to take breaks. You need to take lunch times. You do need to go through a number of different things that are of a routine. So if you check your mail once a day, you know, make sure you continue checking your mail once a day. If you're constantly on Teams, make sure you're on a routine for that and you don't stray from that. And then make sure, again, I've already mentioned this, but taking breaks is really key. It's easy to get sucked into work when you're at home. You don't have people around you. There are less external distractions, but taking a coffee break is just as important as it is in the office. And I don't drink coffee. Okay, I drink tea. I do drink Red Bull on occasion. That's a great way for me to wake up. I'm allergic to coffee, so I had to substitute somehow. But you need to get up. You need to stretch. You need to take a walk. You need to be doing something that gives your brain a rest. Now, what can you do for this? There is something called the Pomodoro technique. It's been around since sometime in the, I think it was the late 80s. And it basically was built around the idea of you work for 25 minutes. And then you take a 5-minute break. After you do that 4 times, you then take a longer break of 15 to 30 minutes. And that kind of works into a lot of our typical breaks and lunch periods in a day. So you start thinking about how that all fits in. And there are variations on this. You find one that really works and gives you success. There's something called the 52-17, I think it's a 52-17 method, where you're working for 52 minutes and then take a 17-minute break. And then you start getting into some really with something like that, you get into some really weird timings, and maybe it'll work for you. Find a timing that's best for you. There's a 90-minute routine, which is basically you work for 90 minutes and then you take a break at the end of that 90 minutes and you get away from whatever you're working on. And depending on how brain intensive your work is, that may require some variations in there. So look into those. Next up, make sure you have a dedicated workspace. And this is one of the big things that's really helped for me. I have a desk in my office that is dedicated for work. Now, I don't put anything else on that, save for, I've got a nail file on there and a couple of pens and scissors and things like that. But none of my typical personal stuff goes over there. I have a work desk. It's right next. I've got a U shape here, actually. It's where I'm sitting right now is my personal system. Off to my left is my work system. Off to my right is my Mac. And I can rotate around to those at different points in time of the day. But I've got my own office. So that's all that dedicated space there. And if you don't have your own space, you don't have the ability to set aside a room, at least have a desk or a table with all of the tools that you need to get your work done. You want to focus there. Next up, staying connected. And connecting up with your coworkers is important. Your colleagues, your friends can help you stay motivated. And you need to set up at least once a day. You should have a cool, casual, like water cooler date, if you will, or check in with someone that you work with. Just casual. You chew the fat. You just connect with them on a personal basis and you get to know them, and that will help you, especially if it's in the middle of a day. Don't put it at the end of the day. Yes, you can do some more of those throughout the day at the end of the day, but I find in the middle of the day, it's one of those things which really enforces that midday slowdown and also, hey, I've got to get this done. It gives me some motivation. I got to get this done, and then I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to chat with one of my coworkers, and I'm going to ask them how their day is going. I'm going to work with them and say, hey, do you get anything great done today? Do you get anything? How's your life going? All of that. You know, that's a key thing. Here's another one. Celebrate your wins. And we're talking about small things, big things. All of us need to be celebrating those wins. You finish a page in a write-up of a document. You finish an email that was particularly rough. Celebrate that. Say, you know what? Hey, I got that done, and that was good. You need to set bite-sized goals for yourself, and yes, chill out a little bit when you achieve them. And I'm not saying a lot. Take a break for a minute, 1 minute. Oh, man, I got that done. It was an hour of hard work. I'm going to spend 1 minute and grab a drink of water and celebrate. And then you move on to the next one. This is going to help you stay motivated. It's going to help you stay positive. This is going to be a game changer for you rather than trudging through and you keep putting out, you know, the industry term is just widgets. That generic idea. Like we can put out widgets all day long, yes, but if we're not having fun, if we're just moving from building widget one to widget two to widget three to widget four, we lose sight of what is going on around us. We cannot really exist in that constant pace. So some people think they can. But break it all up. Again, we go back to that celebrating those wins. Look, I get it. You are working from home. A lot of people are working from home. And it can be a challenge when you first start doing it. Hopefully by now you've gotten over a little bit of that. But I'm hoping that these tips will give you that inspiration to find ways to stay motivated, to stay productive, to just stay focused. And I'll tell you, the little mini breaks, those are what helps really refresh me. Just a minute here and just taking a break from the heavy focus. There's an old saying, motivation is like a muscle. The more you use it, the stronger it gets. So, find what motivates you. Find what works out of everything I've described here. And maybe you've got your own ideas. Maybe someone else listening out there says, hey, I've got an idea for that. Look, if you do, feel free to reach out to me. I encourage this. Again, check it out at ComputerTalkRadio.com. ComputerTalkRadio.com. Scroll down to where it says, contact us today. This is Benjamin Rockwell. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Assad reached out to me, and Assad had a good question in regards to, is Moore's Law broken based on just the CPU speeds that we're able to attain these days. Assad reached out to me at ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. Now, Assad's question in regards to Moore's Law is kind of a tricky one because we have been going along for a number of years with one idea, and that is with Moore's Law, the amount of transistors that you can fit into, let's say, one square inch is supposed to double. And the speeds on our systems no longer double. As a matter of fact, it looks really weird when we start looking at some of our systems and we start saying, okay, back in 2000 or 2001, somewhere in there, we were able to start getting processors that were running 1 gigahertz. And today, the processors that we have are running nowhere near that, as far as for Moore's Law, as far as that tack on of doubling and doubling and doubling. If we in 2000, and if just in 2000, we'll call it that. If in 2000 we could get 1 gigahertz processors, in a matter of a year and a half, we should be able to get 2 gigahertz processors, and in another year and a half, we should be able to get 4 gigahertz processors, and so forth and so on, with it doubling each time. And part of this has to do with a change in how we approached architecture. It's a change in how the chips have been built to continue to provide the speed improvements without actually changing the processor speed. Part of this comes from the fact that when you generate higher speeds of processors, you encounter a heat issue, and then you have to account for that heat issue. And there's a couple of different ways that we can talk about accounting for a heat issue. For instance, one of the things we can do is we can reduce the amount of electricity that's going on. We can increase the efficiency of cooling. We can do a number of these different things all the way along, and those are just two things that we can do to reduce that amount of heat. But along the way, the folks over at Intel said, okay, we've been experimenting with the idea of coprocessors. And that was what they did for a while. It was just a math coprocessor. When it had, it would have the processor built in, and then you could get a math coprocessor. If you were doing some advanced math, it would kick the advanced math over to that coprocessor. And then they said, okay, and mind you, I'm trying to keep this very, very far away from the wonky set of items. I'm trying to just give you an idea in layman's terms of how this all works. So they said, instead of just a math coprocessor, let's just build a second processor into the chip. And that second processor can actually even operate at the same time as the other processor, or eventually, where we're at right now, other processors. So yes, we've been bumping up the speed little bit by little bit along the way. Some of the more recent chips are starting to push up into, they're nudging up into that 5 gigahertz range in turbo mode, which is basically for short bursts of time. They can do a lot of crunching and they can kick that out. But if it gets too hot, it's going to kick it back down. If it manages to overload the system, it's going to kick that back down. And these days, we're seeing systems that run a number of cores. So originally the idea was just to split it across 2 cores. So we've got 2 simultaneous processors, a 2-lane highway where we used to have just 1 highway. And now we're up to the point where we are starting to see, and depending on which of the systems, which of the processors that you get from Intel or AMD, we start bumping this up to many more cores. A matter of these cores are starting to really get up there. a matter of 10 cores with 20 threads. Now, let's talk about threads because that adds in another whole different aspect of how we're looking at this. So the cores are able to take in this information. They're able to handle a lot more information. So we're talking about a 6-lane, 8-lane, 10-lane highway. But what we've done is we've changed the vehicles that are on those highways as well. So when we send the information off to the CPU, we're now able to send off, instead of sedans, we're able to send off vans, which have a much higher capacity, and they bring that information, and the processor can process that increased amount of passengers at the same time across those many lanes of the highway. So we start to get a lot more information going through this CPU, even though it seems like we've only increased the overall speed of those processors, we're able to get so much more information through that highway at the same time and the same amount of operations per second, millisecond, per hour. And that starts to really change how our computers are working. And every time we see a processor, brand new processor come out from, again, Intel or AMD, or yes, there are a few other manufacturers out there along the way, but every time we start bumping up these processors, we've got a new processor that comes out, it is keeping pace with how many operations it can do. And that's where Moore's Law really comes into place. We're able to put a lot more of those transistors into that same square inch than we used to, and at the same price. But those transistors, we've changed how they're working. We've changed how they're processing that information to allow us to really drive the future of processing faster. So Moore's Law applies in a number of different directions. And overall, we have to start playing with those numbers, where those numbers are increasing, even though we aren't getting the additional gigahertz like we would think. We are still getting that advanced computational capability that we have not had any time before. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hey guys, this is Benny Rockwell. Most of us use video cameras nowadays, but what about those old movie films in the back of your closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. Imagine Grandpa's old 8mm and 16mm films that are just sitting in a box getting old and fading away. Legacy Digital will clean and recondition those films, capture them digitally frame by frame, and then produce beautiful DVDs of your precious memories on long-lasting archive-quality discs. They don't use a projector, and your films can't be damaged in the process, the best available for families like yours. The final results are gorgeous. What better way to preserve those precious memories for future generations? Call right now. Mention my name, Benny Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY, 1-866-253-4229. And tell them Benny sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
Each year at this time, we close out the year looking at various people who passed. We list them here in memoriam as various nerds of the year, culminating in the choice of the nerd of the year. And as I look back across 2024, some of the people that we've lost have been very instrumental in our understanding of nerds, very instrumental in our push forward in various directions that have been really impactful in various ways in all of our lives. I start off with a gentleman by the name of William Anders, and you have seen his picture. You have seen the picture Earth Rise. He was an astronaut. And William Anders took that picture from the far side of the moon as it was coming around. Apollo 8 was moving around the moon, and then he saw the Earth from a far distance away. And that iconic photograph is still used to this day. People still marvel over that very small little planet we all live on. But he contributed more. He was one of the people in Apollo 8 on Christmas Eve that went forward and read from the book of Genesis. And that is just something to think about. If you've heard that recording, it's an amazing recording to think that it was way out there. But yeah, I get chills reading some of these. Astronaut Thomas Stafford also passed away. And Stafford was another astronaut. He was on the last mission that went around the moon. It was the setup, the staging for Apollo 11 when we actually landed on the moon. But he was involved in so much in regards to our space program over the years. He was also pictured. He was the American in the Apollo Soyuz mission. That was where we met up with the Apollo program and a Soyuz capsule, and they linked together, they opened the doors, and they shook hands. Thomas Stafford was one of those that did do the shaking of hands. So we lament his loss. Along the way, we also had a number of other people. Gordon Bell, you may be familiar with Bell Labs. You may be familiar with a lot of the different things that he did along the way. He helped architect VAX mini computers. He went forward and he did so much, not only in moving us forward through many different components in computers that we still see today, but he also looked back, developing a couple of computer museums, looking back at some of the ways that we got to where we are today. So we could remember and be aware of just some of the things that led us on this path to right now. Along the way, Lynn Conway, she actually shaped up a lot of how we develop chips. Even to this day, she paved the way for our current concept of system on a chip that powers a lot of the different computing devices we use today. Now, your computer, it keeps time, and we have a protocol that links up almost all of the computers around the world. If you connect to the internet, you probably use something called the NTP protocol that adjusts the time on your computer, or at least stands as a way to deliver the most accurate time. Dave Mills is the gentleman who invented that, and he also passed away this past year. We also lost the former YouTube CEO, Susan Wojcicki. I'm probably butchering that name. But she was there for a number of years and actually passed away, lung cancer for her. The radar detector. We don't think about radar detectors as much these days, but they have been around. If you've driven a fast car, if you own a fast car, you may have had the invention from Michael Valentine, who, yes, really developed a lot of where we learn how to not get speeding tickets. Werner Vinge, he was the father of the tech singularity, and he died as well this past year. The idea that, yes, we might live eventually in a post-human era, which is chilling, it's scary, and yeah, maybe it's not exactly what we want to think about, but yeah, we did lose another named Tony Todd. He was a great actor who went all over the place. He did a lot of movies that are too scary for me and my wife to watch, but he was heavily involved in a number of different Star Trek performances and definitely an amazing, amazing actor there. We also lost the voice of AOL's iconic You've Got Mail. He passed away. Elwood Edwards was the voice behind that, getting paid $200 to record that. But he didn't stammer through that. Someone who did stammer a lot, who did wind up a little bit touching into the nerd world, Bob Newhart. He was Professor Proton in one of his later roles, but he was all over the place in a variety of different roles that sometimes touched into the science fiction realm. Of course, we would be remiss if we didn't mention the voice of Darth Vader, James Earl Jones, who passed away. Coming up next, our Nerd of the Year, here on Computer Talk Radio. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and, well, a normal person. Recently, though, it became clear to me that it was time to upgrade. I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After looking for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their care, their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when all I needed was a 1-gallon bucket. The folks at SiteGround know WordPress, Joomla, and more. SiteGround.com, S-I-T-E, ground.com, for your web hosting needs. SiteGround. Each year, I go through and I list my Nerd of the Year. This Nerd of the Year is selected by going through tons of different obituaries. And generally, I watch through the year and I select who it is that impacted us the most, who inspired nerds or changed our lives overall. And it's a difficult job all the way along. And that Nerd of the Year can vary from a variety of different directions. And usually I give you the name at the very end. This year, you don't recognize the name most likely. A gentleman by the name of Larry Tesler. And yet his impact on computing is felt by all of us. It's used by all of us. He started off working in Silicon Valley in the early 1960s. He worked for Xerox for a good portion of his career. He then went on and he worked for Apple for 17 years. Steve Jobs pulled him away from Xerox and set him up to do a number of different things. He was chief scientist for a while, and after leaving Apple, he set up an education startup. He worked for a while at Amazon and Yahoo, and he went through and did a number of different things along the way. I love one of the quotes. There's almost a rite of passage after you've made some money. You don't just retire. You spend your time funding other companies. And his approach to computing was one of those that was very much towards what we wanted to do, what we all want to do, and that is make computing easier to go forward and to make all of the different things that we do when we're dealing with our computers, our smartphones, our tablets, wherever we're at, for that to be easier, to make that tool that is given to us of technology so much better. And along the way, he came up with something that, yes, I guarantee that you use it on a regular basis. He put together the idea that maybe we should learn from something that old copywriters would do. This is the people in the newspapers. They would cut out a portion of printed text and move that around, and they would glue it somewhere else, paste it somewhere else. So yes, the inventor of cut, copy, and paste passed away this year. And amongst all of the different nerds we've had, even taking pictures in space and reaching out and shaking the hands of someone from a foreign country for the first time in space. All of those pale in comparison to something that I use maybe 20, 30, 100 times in a day to cut and paste, to copy and paste. Larry Tesler made something for all of us that has been around since we started working with computers as far back as the Lisa computer in 1983. We cannot even begin to find someone who has had so much impact in all that we do in computing, in all that we have, without recognizing the loss of Larry Tesler. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows the Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.